Blog Talk Radio.
You never credit yourself, so when you got older, seems like you came back 10 times over now.
Oh, man. Is that not the most somber beginning to the show we've ever done? I mean, that show is just not appropriate at all. Wait, let's do it. Just one more second. Let's go. Hold on. What the fuck is that? This is a political show. Do they not know, like, how I scream at the top of my lungs half the fucking time on the air here? That's not an appropriate lead-in song for me. What the fuck? You gotta get a little Eye of the Tiger in this bitch or something like that. That's the bad, seriously, that's probably the better lead-in music than that. So what's going on, everybody? How's everybody doing? Blog Talk Radio and Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. Glad to have you with me. As always, the number to call up is 646-478-5115. Got a lot to discuss today. Have you guys seen that picture? Some douchebag decided to get Romney's symbol tattooed on his face. And I heard there was some money involved, like it was a bet, right? And look, all I have to say is whatever amount of money that was, it was not worth it. Now you have to walk around with that on your face for the rest of your life. You know what the chances are of you getting laid now? I mean, they have to be non-existent. Right? Unless maybe Ann Coulter. You meet Ann Coulter, then maybe it'll be a match made in heaven. And actually, you know what? I'm lying. For there probably is a certain amount of money that I could get something tattooed on my forehead. I mean, don't do it. But at the same time, if somebody walks up to you and goes, yeah, $10 million. Well, I'm going to have to put some thought behind it. All right, enough fucking around. Let's jump into some important and interesting news that I actually forgot to bring up to you guys yesterday. If you remember, we covered all the different ballot initiatives and how it was largely a win for progressives yesterday. I mean, there's really no denying that. You know, weed is legalized in certain places for actual recreational use and gay marriage in certain places. And I actually forgot to mention, and this is really, really, really good news, 11 states, 11, that's a lot, passed some kind of resolution to overturn Citizens United. Right? Now, if you don't remember, Citizens United is, of course, one of multiple Supreme Court cases which was handed down that basically said, look, money equals free speech, and there should be absolutely, positively no restrictions whatsoever on how much people can spend in the political process, right? And there used to be a limit, I don't know, I think it was like 2,400 or 2,600 or something in that ballpark, and Citizens United even lifted that. So, I mean, that's why you saw, I mean, Sheldon Adelson's name was in the news repeatedly because he spent a metric fuck ton of money trying to get different Republicans elected. I mean, it really is obscene. It's obscene to anybody. And I'm not just saying that from a progressive point of view or a liberal point of view. And honestly, the numbers show it. Montana, which is a state that went to Mitt Romney, clearly, 75% of the people voted in favor of the resolution to basically overturn Citizens United and say, no, we're not having it. This is the one area. You know, maybe I'm missing one small place here or there where there's agreement between the Democrats and the Republicans, but this is really the main area where you see both sides going, yeah, money should not be in politics, especially not to the degree that we have it in our politics. This is the most bipartisan, non-controversial thing ever. But, of course, we live in a system where they don't give a goddamn if we have a consensus on it, right? Because the establishment politicians are going to do nothing to change it. Because think about what they would be doing if they actually voted to change that. They are massively voting against their own interests. Because the politicians on both the Republican side and the Democratic side both get tremendous campaign contributions from these big corporations and big money interests, and then they scratch their backs when they get into office. They pass legislation in their favor. And look, if they were to actually decide to pass legislation to say, big money has to get out of our political system, they would literally be voting money out of their pocket, and they wouldn't want to do that. So who is the silent majority, and it's fair to call it a silent, overwhelming majority on this particular issue? It's the American people. Democrats and Republicans alike are out here screaming, hey, hello, can we get our voice heard, please? Right? Can my voice compete with GE? Can my voice compete with ExxonMobil lobbying the government with hundreds of thousands of dollars to get their way? No, I don't have a lobby. Kyle doesn't have a lobby. You guys listening, you don't have a lobby lobbying on your behalf. If you actually, I know you guys have heard me make the argument a billion times, but guess what? I'm going to make it a billion and one times. Because it's true. Look, you can't have an honest debate in a political system unless you get money out of it. Because the politicians are only human, and they are going to legislate in favor of the people who got them elected. 93% of the time, the person who has the most money gets elected. That's a comical number. So what's the formula? Raise as much money as possible and get elected. And then when you get elected, what do? You turn around and you service and you fillet the moneyed interests that got you into office. And the Democrats and the Republicans, to their credit, are on board with this. And it's about fucking time we got rid of it. And I urge everybody to support. If you go to wolf-pack.com, the Young Turks, Cenk Uygur, came up with this idea of getting an amendment passed. It calls for a constitutional convention to get an amendment passed which bans money from politics. Right? And that's actually the only way you're going to be able to get it done, too, is through a constitutional convention, because the Supreme Court decided that it is literally unconstitutional to put restrictions on the amount of money that people spend on our politicians, right? No, I think they're dead wrong about that, but they have ruled on that. So what does that mean? That means that even if legislation is passed, either on the state level or on the federal level, to limit money in politics, if somebody sues for it and it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, they're just going to rule the same way again and say, no, you know, the precedent we set through Citizens United has led us to conclude it is unconstitutional to limit the amount of money people spend in the political system, so they'll just overturn it again. So the only way to get it done is to get a constitutional amendment passed through a constitutional convention. And again, this is an area where everybody agrees, right? I host one of the most progressive talk radio shows that's out there, and I agree, and the fucking state of Montana agrees, which probably disagrees with me on every other policy issue out there. But on this, we have agreement. This is the most common sense issue out there. So let me give credit to all the states that passed resolutions. And I want to be clear, these resolutions are not like actually instituted laws where now in those places they don't have the influence of money in politics. They're just resolutions that say, we're taking a stand and letting everybody know we're against this, right? And that could lead to better things down the road, but it's a start, right? It's a start. That's why it's optimistic. That's why I'm giving it so much credit. But I got to give credit to California, Hawaii, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New Mexico, Rhode Island, Vermont, Connecticut, Maryland, Montana, and Colorado. All of those states, and unfortunately my state is not included there, New York. I don't know why that is, because we're pretty much always on page with places like California. I think it has to do with the fact that we actually don't have ballot initiatives here in New York, so we couldn't vote for that. But if we did, we certainly would vote for that. But I do want to give all the credit in the world to those particular places. All right, moving forward, let's talk about, you guys briefly heard me touch on yesterday, the so-called controversy involving Chris Matthews, right? I briefly talked about how one of my Twitter followers and one of my brother-in-law's close friends told me to, when I tweeted that I was going to do a victory lap for Obama winning, he said, okay, fine, you deserve it, but do me a favor, also slam the hurricane thankers. And I was like, who's a hurricane thanker? What are you talking about? And he said, well, you know, Chris Matthews and Michael Moore, they thanked the Hurricane. And so I'm like, wait, hold on, one second. You're telling me that you genuinely believe Chris Matthews wanted death and destruction to get Barack Obama reelected? You actually believe that? And he was like, yeah, I do. And he sent me a clip of something that has gone viral now, and in fact, Chris Matthews has come out and apologized profusely. Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I can't believe I said that. I'm so bad, right? And I got to be honest. I don't think it's, like, everybody's blowing a gasket over it. You have to really twist what you think the sentiment he's trying to portray is to think he's really saying what he slipped up and said. So let's listen to the little clip, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Just close my thoughts tonight.
Please.
It takes a half a second. I am so proud of the country to reelect this president and overcoming, not because of the partisanship or any of the, even the policies, just the fact, here's an African-American guy from an unusual background, part immigrant background, part African-American background, with all this assault on him from day one, from Mitch McConnell, from the clowns out there that aren't elected, never will be to anything. And the way he took it, as somebody said, it with coolness and charm and dignity, and just took it and kept moving forward and doing his job. And the American people, and I know we look at these percentages, 40% of white, but fine. That's about right among Democrats the last couple cycles, three cycles or four. Good work for them. Good work for him. A good day for America. I'm so glad we had that storm last week, because I think the storm was one of those things. No, politically, I should say, not in terms of hurting people. The storm brought in possibilities.
All right, did you hear that last part there? That was the important part. I'm so glad we had that storm that week. And then somebody goes, ooh. And he goes, no, politically, I'm saying, not because it hurt people, right? Everybody's ignoring that second part, but they're harping on the first part. Like, oh, my God, he said, I'm so glad we had that storm last week. Come on. Are we adults or are we not adults? Does anybody actually believe Chris Matthews twists his evil mustache as he wakes up in the morning and goes, you know who I'm going to be? I'm going to be like the Nazis. And I'm going to say I like death and destruction, and I love it when people lose their livelihood and their homes are floating away. Of course, nobody thinks Chris Matthews actually likes that. What Chris Matthews was saying is, as a result of the storm, President Barack Obama showed his leadership, which he did, and it turned out being politically advantageous for him. I'm so tired of the fake outrage game. And then, look, I mean, Chris Matthews came out afterwards, and he vociferously apologized, and I don't even think he should have done that. Seriously, this was his apology. He seriously went, I mean, you should have heard his apology. I was going to play it for you guys, but it's too goddamn long, and it's too, like, it makes me cringe to listen to it because he's accepting the framework that other people put on it. First of all, the guy was on air for like 5 hours straight or 6 hours straight. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. You heard how drunk he sounded. If you saw the video, his eyes are half goddamn closed. He called Barack Obama African there too. But is anybody, oh my God, he said Barack Obama's African. No, because we're adults. We know the sentiment he was trying to portray. Clearly what he was saying was the response to the hurricane showed Barack Obama's leadership, and that helped him get reelected. But instead, everybody's pretending like Chris Matthews is in favor of people dying. Yeah, you nailed him. Chris Matthews wants people to die. Come on, everybody, let's wake the fuck up. Let's stop with the fake outrage nonsense. It really makes no goddamn sense. I'm so sick of it. And then I love one of the points that the guy I was debating with on Twitter made to me, right? And by the way, we're going to at some point, I talked to him, asked if he'd come on the show. He said he would at some point, but he wasn't able to do it today. His work hours conflict, et cetera, right? But the point he made was, oh, could you imagine if somebody on Fox News said that? You would be, you know, you would blow a gasket. No, I wouldn't blow a gasket. Wrong, because I don't play the he said, she said, gotcha bullshit garbage game. What I talk about when I'm actually outraged, I'm outraged about some kind of policy proposal that the other side has talked about, right? I'm outraged because of the lack of intelligence that the other side portrays and the fact that they fail to understand that the policies they're in favor of implementing literally hurt people. That's when I get outraged. If somebody slips up and says something that sounds politically incorrect within the context of saying something that's indisputably true, no. I'm not gonna flip out about that. All right, so did I make myself clear there? It's ridiculous, too, because even the left was jumping all over. Oh, my God, how dare he say that? He obviously wants people to die and suffer. Really, that's a guy who spent most of his adult life on TV screaming for efficient government and rational government that provides a good safety net for people and helps people. That guy wants people to die in a hurricane. Come on, man. Come on. We're so childish in this country with our fake outrage syndrome, right? And look, it's also, I'm not leaving the left out of this, too. I think the left is guilty of it, too, right? Like when Don Imus said, oh, there's a nappy-headed hoe there. Who cares? Don Imus is an old, out-of-touch white dude who, if he didn't say those things in public, we all probably thought he was going to say it behind closed doors anyway. Who gives a shit, right? But no, but oh, controversy, he said something. Oh, my God, just calm down. Just bring it down, bring it down, bring it down. All right. So that's the whole Matthews deal that was going on. Now, let's jump to this Ann Coulter story. This was awesome. So Ann Coulter was on Laura Ingraham's radio show, and man, she sounded like drunk and depressed, and it just sounded weird, to be honest. So let's listen to what she had to say, and then we'll come back and we'll discuss it, and we'll actually break it down, because there might actually be one area where I agree with Ann Coulter, which I know is like impossible, but I actually think I do in one part.
Your analysis is more hopeful than mine. I should probably stay away from radio and TV for the next week, because I'm pretty pessimistic about the country. I think, despite what you said being true, I think Romney ran just on his own force of will, a magnificent campaign. I think he was the perfect candidate.
You think he ran a magnificent campaign?
Yes.
On what basis are you saying that?
Yes.
He got his clock cleaned.
How
did he run a positive, a magnificent campaign, Ann? I can't believe Ann Coulter, who is a truth teller on issues from the economy to social issues to racial demagoguery, is saying that Romney ran a magnificent campaign with Eric Fernstrom and Stu Stevens at the helm. How could you possibly conclude that?
No, I said he did. I didn't say the campaign was magnificent. It was better than Ronald Reagan's. Romney had to start inventing gaffes out of thin air. Romney is the first Republican candidate I've seen where I don't get nervous when he talks. He's a beautiful speaker. He's articulate. He has an articulate vice president, something Reagan certainly did not have. He was so good in the debates, as I knew he would be. He had a serious plan for fixing real problems. He concentrated on jobs. That was the important issue. He concentrated on the economy. We have 8%, more than 8% unemployment. People are suffering. The country is in disarray. If Mitt Romney cannot win in this economy, then the tipping point has been reached. We have more takers than makers, and it's over.
I think he was the best president
we could have right now. I mean, I'm really, it isn't so much that Obama won re-election. The country has barely survived 4 years with him. I think Mitt Romney was the president we needed right now, and I think it is so sad that we are going to be deprived of his brain power, of his skills in turning companies around, turning the Olympics around, his idea and his kindness for being able to push very conservative ideas on a country that no longer is interested in conservative ideas, that it is interested in handouts.
Now.
Okay. So, where to begin? The last part of that, by the way, I think was so telling. Let's start there. Let's start at the end. Where she goes, oh, Mitt Romney, he'd be so effective at pushing conservative ideas on a country that no longer wants conservative ideas. she's admitting something right there, right? That I, she's, as far as I know, the only right winger who has admitted that, right? Because all the other right wingers, what are they doing? They're trying to say, no, 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 blame Mitt Romney. He was terrible, he was terrible, he was terrible. But the conservative ideology, no, 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 everybody still loves the conservative ideology. It's just that that one guy was bad and we don't like him either, right? So the old, Romney's the scapegoat now. And it's not that people just disliked Mitt Romney. They also, keep it real, didn't like the ideas he represented and the policies he represented. The American people rebuked that idea, right? So that's actually an interesting admission at the end there by Ann Coulter saying, look, he would have pushed the conservative ideas on the American people that they don't want. All right, well, very telling there, Mrs. Coulter. Or should I say Miss Coulter? Because is she married? No, she's not married, right? Yeah, no, I don't think any man could stand her. Except Rush. Oh, her and Rush would be such an awkward couple. Oh, could you imagine her and Rush? Oh, that's so... Oh. Oh, that should count as a natural disaster if that ever happens. All right, anyway. Let's see, what else we got here? Mitt Romney... Oh, yeah, I love that part. Didn't she sound, like, so out of it and disillusioned and, like, drunk and, like, oh, my God, I can't believe Obama won. Oh, I just popped, like, 4 Xanax and, like, totally drank so much wine. Oh, my God. She said Mitt Romney was the perfect president we could have right now, like, the best person she could possibly imagine getting in office right now. Really, Anne? Really, Anne? And this is the part I love, too, is that it's almost as if Ann Coulter is saying, like, oh, no, 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 she knows the actual Mitt Romney that would govern, right? She knows what policies he's in favor of and what policies he's not in favor of. But no, 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 Ann, you can't know that. You want to know how I know that? Because nobody knows what Mitt Romney stands for. Mitt Romney ran in the primary as far right as humanly possible out there in Rick Santorum, Kookieville. And then all of a sudden during the general election, what does he do? Sprint to the center, sprint to the center. And even in the first debate, he attacked Barack Obama from the left on some issues. Does anybody actually believe Mitt Romney would have governed to the left of President Barack Obama? No. Right? That's the point, though, is that nobody knows how Mitt Romney would have governed because he's a fucking chameleon. He ran his campaign flip-flopping on every single goddamn issue. And then when people called him out on it, he would say, how dare you call me out on it? Liberal bias in the media. No, Mitt, you're telling... We've run clips on this show. Mitt Romney saying one thing, and then Mitt Romney saying the diametrically opposed thing. Well, then you're not a serious candidate, dude. You're just not serious if you do that. And then I love the part, like, three-quarters of the way through there. Yeah, the country barely survived 4 years under President Barack Obama. Barely survived? Barely survived. We were losing 800,000 jobs a month at the end of Bush's administration. And then President Barack Obama comes in. We create 5.4 million jobs. And, you know, that's such a terrible, horrible, disastrous thing that we barely survived as a country. Why did we barely? No, no, no. The country's doing just dandy. The super-de-duper far-right wing, which comprises maybe 20% of the population or about 25% of the population, in their fictional fantasy land that they've made up in their head, in that world, we're barely surviving, right? And that, by the way, this is the same super far-right wing group of people that said in a poll in 2007 that they thought that year, 2007, Jesus Christ was going to come back to earth and you know, do his thing and the rapture and this and then that, right? Looney Tunes. Looney Tunes is what these people are. And then the part where I actually think I agreed with her is where at the beginning there when Laura Ingraham is like, what? You're saying he ran a good campaign? What? Right? She's so, like, flabbergasted by that. Why? Because in the right-wing echo chamber, where they just make shit up, they're rationalizing the loss by saying, no, 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 the conservative ideology is fine. Mitt Romney is the guy to blame because his campaign was so disastrous. But in reality, yes, I will concede. Before the first debate, Mitt Romney was not running a good campaign. right? But from the first debate and on, Mitt Romney, although, granted, he lied about absolutely everything. He did a 180 on almost every single policy issue, right? And he also, at the same time, by the way, managed to give very few details, which the media was sending him through the ringer on, rightfully so. So at the beginning, he wasn't running a good campaign. But from the first debate and onward, although he lied about everything, he did run as good a campaign as he could possibly run, given the fact that he was such a terrible candidate. You see what I'm saying? Those are two different things, right? He's as big of a caricature as a candidate as you can possibly imagine, right? He's worth $350 million. I mean, he's a walking robot. It doesn't seem like there's a genuine bone in his body. There's a billion things to critique the guy about before he even opens his mouth, right? Just at face value, he doesn't appear to be a good politician because there's so many ways to attack him, right? So based on the fact that he was such a terrible candidate, given that terrible hand he's dealt from the get-go, he did run a pretty good campaign from the first debate on, right? He hammered Barack Obama in that first debate. And look, it reflected itself in how the media reacted and in the polling following it. So I actually do agree with Coulter to a certain extent on the first point. But in all the other areas, as usual, I mean, she's riding the short bus, man. She is loopy as loopy can get. And in that clip, I'm not saying I know for sure because I don't, but it seemed like she was loopy in another way too, popping maybe some Vicodins or some Xanax or some Klonopin or, you know, I just got to relax, bro. Romney didn't win. Somebody get me some pills and some Jack Daniels, please. Oh, man. What are we going to do with these people, guys? Oh, all right. Well, let's do this. Let's take our first break now, and then when we come back, stick with me because it's only going to get a lot more fun. We got good old Rushy. Good old Rushy Limbaugh. Have you seen that I think he put weight back on, and didn't he have gastric bypass? Like, how do you put weight on after you have gastric bypass? He went through that one stage where he was, like, super skinny, like a skeleton, but his skin didn't, like, conform back to what he was. So he had, like, flappiness all over the place, looked like pancakes were hanging from under his chin. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. Come right back.
The way you're moving your body like you never had a love. Had a love. Oh, when you had a lot of dreams that transformed decisions. The fact that you saw the world affected all your decisions. But it wasn't your fault, wasn't in your intentions. To be the one here talking to me, be the one listening. But I admire your popping bottles and tipping. Just as much as you admire your bartending and stripping, baby. So don't be mad. Nobody else trippin'. You see a lot of crooks and them crooks still crooks. See you had a lot of crooks try to steal your heart. Never really had that. Couldn't ever figure out how to love. Yeah, had a lot of moments that didn't last forever. Now you in the corner trying to put it together. How to love. Yeah.
Hey, Pandora listeners. Did you know Curry Acura in Scarsdale is famous for their extensive collection of certified pre-owned Acuras? And when you buy a certified Acura at Curry Acura, you drive home with the benefits of a new car for thousands less. And even better, you get Curry's famous love-it-or-leave-it exchange policy. You can bring it back even if you don't like the color. Click on your screen right now to see Curry Acura's extensive certified pre-owned collection.
Show, Blog Talk Radio and Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. Glad to have you guys with me. All right, so Rush Limbaugh. Let's talk about him. Stop gagging, guys. I could hear you gagging through the radio. So he went on the radio after. By the way, I typed in Rush Limbaugh to YouTube and hit like, use the search filter and put, I think, from either today or this week or whenever it was. And recently, see, this is why I love conservatives. There was a video titled, Why Mitt Romney Will Win, or something like that, right? And it's like, the right wing, they're unable to separate what they want to happen from what they think will happen based on the polls and reality, right? So like we talked about yesterday, if I had thought Mitt Romney was going to win, I would have came on air and said, look, I think Mitt Romney's going to take the election, right? Now, that doesn't mean I want Mitt Romney to win, but if I thought he was going to win, I would have said it. The right wing is so crazy that Rush Limbaugh can never get it out of him, to get on air and say, look, you guys all know I want Romney to win, but I think Barack Obama's going to win. No, every single one of them, for whatever inexplicable reason, goes out there and says, no, I know Romney's going to win. What am I basing that on? Nothing. I just want Romney to win. And then they come up with all these rhetorical arguments with no actual facts or polls or statistics, and they dupe over their stupid audience. That's why they were all genuinely surprised, man. They were all so surprised. Meanwhile, the guy who predicted 49 out of 50 states right last time, I mean, he nailed the election on the money in 2008, said, yeah, there's a 91% chance Barack Obama's going to get reelected. Right? This wasn't a surprise. This was the likely outcome. Now, it was a little bit bigger of a victory than the poll suggested and than what I thought, right? But actually, Nate Silver this time, in 08, he got 49 out of 50 states right. You know how many states he got right this time? 50 out of 50. He got it exactly right. Remember Joe Scarborough getting on the air and saying, this guy's a joke. This guy, anybody who thinks this election isn't up in the air, 50-50, yada, yada, da-da-da. This is what they're not getting. Nate Silver is not giving his opinion. Nate Silver is giving a compilation of all the polls, all the statistics, all the research, all the facts, and computing it and letting you know, here's the chances Barack Obama wins, here's the chances that he loses. But yet they still wage a war on him. It's a war on math. It's the Republican war on math and the media war on math. But Rush Limbaugh was on his show, and of course he has to come out after the election and give his ridiculous rationalization and justification and all that fun stuff. So what line of attack does he take? Well, just like I was talking about in the last segment, the Republicans, they can't admit that there's a problem with their ideology, because they've all based their identities on the ideology. They've all based their lives on this false belief system, right? Or this belief system, I should say, that isn't good for a majority of the people in America. And it turns out a majority of the people in America don't agree with their vision, right? But so what does he do? He gets out there, he says, of course, there's nothing wrong with the party, the Republican Party. There's nothing wrong with the ideology. There's something wrong with the American people. Now, what happened, big guy? Now, I thought Rush Limbaugh and all these Republicans were the guys who were telling me in the year 2000 and in the year 2004 when George W. Bush won and when we went to the Iraq War and the Democrats were opposed to the war. And he said, look, man, you're unpatriotic if you talk bad about America in any way, shape, or form, even if you're just talking about it in the context of I want the troops home, I disagree with the policy we have, right? No, unpatriotic Democrats. Here Rush Limbaugh's going out there and basically saying all the American people are wrong, right? All the majority that voted for Barack Obama, which was a pretty solid majority this time around, they're all wrong, right? He got over 50% of the vote. And not a hint of, aren't I opening myself up to be called unpatriotic? No, because the way that Rush Limbaugh defines patriotism, even if 100% of the people in the United States of America voted for Barack Obama, right, hypothetically speaking, he would still come out there and say, all you guys are the unpatriotic ones. My vision of America is the only vision of America that makes sense. And you guys are wrong, I'm right. Et cetera, right? So, I mean, think about the tremendous statistical disadvantage that Mitt Romney had in terms of every minority group and women, right? I mean, women are over 50% of the population, so you can't call them a minority group, but that's how the Republicans look at them nonetheless, right? They view if you're not a white male, then you're a minority group. So he crushed in Latinos, he crushed in the black vote, he crushed in the women vote, Barack Obama did, and Mitt Romney only won elderly white folks. So then now Rush Limbaugh comes up with this theory of, you know what it is? And I heard Bill O'Reilly touch on this as well, but Rush Limbaugh used this term. He said, obviously what people did is they voted for Santa Claus over hard work. And Bill O'Reilly was talking about as well. He goes, obviously what people did is they voted for Barack Obama because they want stuff. This is now their talking point on the right after the election. Well, America voted for Barack Obama because they want stuff. We want stuff, right? Name one thing we want. One. Kyle, what about the Obama phone? The Obama phone was created, so-called Obama phone, was a policy created under Ronald Reagan, expanded under George W. Bush, and Obama hasn't done anything about it, hasn't proposed any legislation to expand it further. It's a policy that existed before he got into office. So, whoops, wrong on that one. Turns out Republicans are the ones that actually want to give out phones, for whatever reason, right? Name one thing. Oh, Kyle, healthcare. No, healthcare. The healthcare legislation that passed was a conservative healthcare bill. It was proposed by the Heritage Foundation, a right-wing think tank. It was Bob Dole's plan from 1996. It was very similar to Romney Care. The individual mandate and keeping the status quo as it is and telling the American people they have to buy from a private insurance company is a business-friendly policy. It is a conservative policy. It has nothing to do with getting stuff, right? It's making people take personal responsibility is what it is. So theoretically, and in the past, the Republicans actually were in favor of that. But since Barack Obama proposed it and he has cooties, well, now all of a sudden we're against it. We don't – see, this is what I can't stand about. It all goes back to – What do Republicans believe? What do Democrats believe? Right? I can tell you what Democrats believe. I am one, right? Democrats believe that if a government is gonna exist and we are going to have to pay taxes to the government, the money we are paying to the government with our tax dollars needs to be justified. They need to do something positive with that money, right? Societal safety net, for example. Give health care to the old folks through Medicare. Give them money through Social Security so they're not poor and out on the streets starving. Right? Unemployment insurance, because when people are going through a rough patch and they get laid off from their job and they're looking for another one, cushion the blow and make sure they don't get kicked out of their house because they can't pay their mortgage or can't pay the rent, right? We want an efficient government. What does the right wing want? They pay the government taxes to appease the government and say, here, take my money and get away. But that's not smart. That's just dumb. And then when the government turns around and wages wars on countries that didn't attack us, and we end up spending, by some estimates, by when all is said and done in Iraq and Afghanistan, $4 trillion of your money, well, which philosophy makes sense? I pose that to you, my loyal listeners. Right, the Republicans, they live in this just this backwards world where there really are it's the simplistic black and white factually incorrect Ayn Rand worldview. There are makers and there are takers. If you're not a business owner, well then you just have a job and you're a net taker from the government, and you know, you should be relegated to a life of working a minimum wage job from 9 to 5, not even being able to afford your own goddamn health insurance because a lot of the places that pay minimum wage don't give you health insurance, like Walmart, for example. They are the anti-civilization, people like Rush Limbaugh. I mean, Santa Claus, that's who we voted for, Santa Claus, by voting for Barack Obama. See, this is the problem. This is the problem with the conservative worldview, is that in order to attack the other side, they have to create a straw man and a caricature, because the things that they say we believe, we just simply don't believe. They try to make us out to be irresponsible, lazy moochers. I mean, that's what he's doing. He's calling everybody in the country who voted for Barack Obama, the 50% of Americans that voted for Barack Obama, half the country is lazy, parasitic, irresponsible. They just want to sit on their couch all day. I mean, you have to have such a warped view of reality to twist it to the point where you genuinely believe that. And I think Rush Limbaugh does genuinely believe it. I don't think he's solely out there to do the bidding of his corporate overlords and he's actually a deep down a liberal. No, right? I mean, he certainly is doing the bidding of his corporate overlords, but he also believes the stuff he says. But it's utterly silly stuff. I mean, come on, guys. Come on. I know most of you guys listening to me don't believe in somebody who's so utterly ridiculous as Rush Limbaugh is, but at the same time, he's a voice in the conversation when he should be given Thorazine and put in front of a TV. All right, so now from let's pivot slightly from completely railroading one conservative. And actually, you know what? I'll give myself a little bit of credit on that one there. Here, let's do one of these.
You got knocked the fuck out, man!
So let's pivot from that to... God, I love this so much. You guys have no idea. I'm going to break this down in like 96 different ways. But let's listen. This is Pat Robertson's election special, and he was talking with a whole bunch of right-wingers. I'll tell you who some of those guys were afterwards, and then we'll talk about the things they said.
Obama turned out this huge. It wasn't because he's had such a successful first term and winning. If indeed he wins, he hardly has a mandate for anything. Certainly not that. This is a status quo election. But he turned out this huge chunk of voters that I didn't think he was going to be able to amass, and yet he did.
The fact of the matter is, judges matter, and President Obama could well select two or three justices of the Supreme Court. And frankly, that's the Supreme Court I'm going to be dealing with for the rest of my life. So the reality is I'm going to deal with it the best way I can. And we've had a lot of unanimous decisions in the past, and that's what we're going to shoot for again. But I think that this is a bit of a wake-up call.
Obama has offered some kind of a Mickey Mouse fiscal program that was just shut down almost unanimously by the Congress. What have they got? He doesn't seem to have any program, and yet he's been able to win re-election. What is going on with the American people?
The people spoke. You know, H.L. Mencken, the great social critic, said democracy is giving people what they want, good and hard. And I think we're going to see 4 years of people regretting this decision if President Obama does hang on. The left won over the last 30 years, and conservatives get in only long enough to try to start fixing the problems, and then they're pushed right back out. So maybe that's our future. I hope not, but
it's horrible.
It's horrible.
The services, the garbage collection, and the police, and the fire, and the maintenance of the roads. In certain areas in America right now, they're digging up paved roads because they can't afford to continue to maintain the highways. That's what I saw in Zaire.
Okay. All right, so, man, let's break this down. Let's start all the way from the top, right? So the guy speaking at the very beginning, his name is Fred Barnes. He is a clown-ass writer for the Weekly Standard, or he might even own the Weekly Standard. Neither here nor there. That's like the conservative Bible. So he says, oh, if Obama wins, he doesn't have a mandate, obviously, right? So let me get this straight. So if our guy wins with over 300 electoral votes, no, it's not a mandate. But if George W. Bush squeaks by with 283 electoral votes, it's a mandate. But that's what happened. When George Bush won in 2004, he won with 283 votes. He said, I have a mandate. And the conservatives were like, yeah, oh, yeah, he sure does have a mandate. Yeah. Barack Obama, over 300 votes, no mandate. Okay, I got you. That makes sense. I love their childlike arguments. Whenever it's them, it's like, no, we have a mandate. And then when we get a mandate, no, you don't have a mandate. Stop. Don't be fair. Be kind. And then the guy in the middle of the middle there, the one who came after the first guy, that is Jay Sekulow. He's from the ACLJ. Remember them? We discussed him last week. They have this guy on that. I mean, they have him on. They had him on to talk about the Supreme Court. You remember what he's doing currently right now? He's working in Africa with known dictators to make homosexuality illegal. You're going to trust that guy's opinion on the Supreme Court in the United States? I mean, this is the most radical panel out there, and it's no surprise. It's on the 700 Club, Pat Robertson's election special. Hopefully nobody was watching it because these people are Looney Tunes. And I love how flummoxed Pat Robertson is, too. And it's genuine. He actually is flummoxed. He's like, I don't get it. I've been flinging mud for 4 years pretending God speaks to me about how evil Obama is, and he still won. That clip right there, guys, that's the conservative bubble. He really thought Obama was going to get destroyed when the polling showed anything but that. And then the guy at the end, I love the guy at the end. He said how his name is Paul Bonicelli, by the way, or Bonicelli, of the clown-ass Regent University, one of these right-wing institutions. And what does he say? He goes, oh, yeah, you know, the left has won the past 30 years. And, you know, Republicans, they get into office just long enough to clean up, and then they get swept out again. Are you serious? That's amazing. The exact opposite is true. Reagan, record deficits. Economy fell off a cliff because of Reaganomics. Growing income inequality. George H.W. Bush, who came after him, still huge deficits, lackluster job creation. Then Clinton comes in, a Democrat, but not even a real progressive, right? He comes in, there's peace and prosperity, there's 22 million jobs created, there's a rising standard of living. Republicans tried for 8 years to take down Clinton. What was their biggest beef at the end of it? He had a blowjob. How dare he? Then George W. Bush comes in. Two wars that were unnecessary. They weren't paid for. Record debt, record deficits, 600,000 jobs lost in 8 years. Worst recession since the Great Depression. Obama comes in, saves 5.4 million jobs, gives people health care, and he's the problem, according to these right-wingers. Look, it's so hard for me to, like, every day I come on the air here and I have to debunk their nonsense. This is how they think. The way they think is, our guy is good by definition. It doesn't matter what our guy does. He's good from the get-go. He's, by definition, he's good. So if he has to do a little bad thing here, or he loses jobs in this area, or, you know, he turns out to make decisions that hurt the American people by cutting Medicare or doing any of a number of things, or there's growing income inequality under his administration, well, you know, that's just whatever. It's the ends justify the means. We know he's a good guy, so if some bad things happened, you can't blame him, blame anybody else. Keep electing our guys anyway. And the Democrats, no matter how good they do in the statistically relevant areas, no matter how good they do on the legislative issues, no matter how much you prove it with numbers, they go, no, you don't understand. Your guy is bad by definition. He's already bad from the get-go. On day one, when he's elected, he's evil. He's wrong about everything. Why do you think they said they called the press conference? Mitch McConnell called the press conference when President Barack Obama got elected. Our number one priority is to not have Barack Obama get a second term. But wait a second. What happened to representing the American people, which is your goddamn job? No, that's out the window, of course. And then at the end there, Pat Robertson. They're digging up paved roads because they can't afford it. Well, first of all, digging up roads costs money. Second of all, no, they're not. They're not digging up roads. And then he starts talking about government jobs. I love that part. He starts talking about government jobs and infrastructure spending and how we need to protect those things. when that's what the Democrats do. That's what the Democrats stand for. Republicans are openly opposed to infrastructure spending and government jobs like the ones he listed. Police department, fire department. It's astounding that Pat Robertson has been covering politics as long as he has. He ran for president at one point, and he doesn't know that. How do you not know that? You have to be so dense to not know that, man. But it's Pat Robertson. Who am I kidding? This is the guy who I saw a clip the other day. I don't think we covered it on the show. I think it was like one of the last stories I didn't have time for or something. But I saw a clip the other day where he's talking to his co-host. He's like, well, you know, I was talking to God. I was praying to God, and I wanted to see what God was going to tell me about this country. And what he told me is that we're heading for a disaster. And he actually wrote down like 10 things that he says God told him. I mean, how childlike are we? This guy's got a TV show saying God's talking to him. I don't know, man. I don't know. Yeah. The right wing never ceases to amaze me. They really don't. I mean, and I've grown a thick skin over the years reading about all the stuff they talk about, all the things they do, all the policies they're in favor of, their incredible revisionist history. But it still gets to me. It still gets to me. All right. Let's do this Joe Biden story now. So Joe Biden was talking to the press, and see, this is why I love Joe Biden. He said the election is a mandate on tax policy. Now, you and I both know what's going to be the right-wing response to this. We all know it. That's it. Joe Biden said there's a mandate for tax policy. Oh, my God, he's so evil. He's wrong. Obviously, no mandate. But wait a second. Who won the election? And how much did they win the election by? The American people have spoken pretty clearly, right? So all I have to say about this is that, God, I hope the president listens to his vice president. And Joe Biden is exactly right by saying Obama has a mandate on tax policy. And the Republicans and the media, by the way, are going to try to tell you otherwise. But here are the facts. 66% of the American people are in favor of taxing people making over $200,000 a little more. 70% of the American people want to hike taxes on corporations by limiting their deductions. In other words, the perfect example I always go back to is GE. GE, after all the tricky nonsense and their team of lawyers finding all the different loopholes to go through, they paid 0% in corporate income tax. 0% in corporate tax. And I love the right-wing talking point. We have some of the most confiscatory corporate tax rates out there. No, wrong. We don't. Ask GE. And in fact, all of the corporations put together, we're second to the best in the world in terms of corporate tax rate. And here's my favorite one, and I would use this statistic ad nauseum if I was the Democrats, if I was Barack Obama, if I was Joe Biden, if I was actually in favor of raising taxes on the rich, which, by the way, I know this might piss off some of my listeners, I have my reservations and my doubts as to whether or not President Barack Obama is actually in favor of doing that. Why? Because he caved so easily the last time this was up for debate. Right? You remember, they had the debate about the Bush tax cuts, and President Barack Obama was like, oh, the Republicans, they twisted my arms. I guess we'll extend the Bush tax cuts for the richest people in the country. No, you shouldn't have done that. You should have fought back. The American people were on your side. You would have won the debate. You would have won the debate. But this is the stat I would use. 53% of Republican-leaning independents agreed with hiking corporate taxes through limiting deductions. And it's something like 40% also of actual registered Republicans. 4 out of 10 Republicans say, yeah, let's raise taxes on corporations by limiting deductions. So you have this bipartisan consensus. And not only that, you don't even need that much wide agreement. You won the election. And the opinion polls are clear. The American people want to raise taxes on the richest Americans. They got the memo. They see the debt. They understand we need revenues, not just through cutting spending. So, Joe Biden, please lead the fight on this tax thing, man. I don't know if you guys know this. Joe Biden's a goddamn warrior. Did you see that debate? You saw that debate. I mean, he pummeled Doogie Howser into the ground, man. So, you know, Mr. President, please listen to Joe Biden on this. He's only 1,000,000% right. And, all right, so what are we going to do now? I'm going to take another quick break. When we come back, today's Pat Robertson Day. I'm really not kidding. I have the most awesome, the most hilarious Pat Robertson clip I think I've ever heard. And I've heard a lot of funny things from Pat Robertson, so stick with me.
Ooh,
online, on Facebook, shopping, playing games. But for some, the internet habit is ruining their lives.
You were a winner online and a loser in real life.
Tonight, Rock Center with Brian Williams puts you at the center of online addiction. How do you know if you're addicted?
It costs you your children.
At the center of power, investigation, controversy. At the center of it all, Rock Center with Brian Williams, 10, 9 Central, tonight on NBC.
I don't see how you can hate from outside of the club.
You can't even get in.
Leg out. Yellow model jean. Yellow bottom sipping. Yellow Lamborghini. Yellow top missing. Yeah, yeah. That shit look like a toupee. I get what you get in 10 years. In 2 days. Ladies love me. I'm on my cool day. If you get what I get, what would you say? She whacked it. Mr. Miyagi, and the suicide doors, all these cars. Look at me now, look at me now. Oh, oh, I'm getting paper. Look at me now, oh, look at me now. Yeah, fresh, oh, look bigger than your brother, cause I'm killing every grid I can try to be on my shit. Better cause you chick, get you better. I can get it as you accidentally slip and fall on my dude. Oops, I said, oh my dude. I ain't really mean to say oh my dude, but since we talking about my dude. I'm done.
Hey, old Breezy. Let me show you how to keep the dice rolling when you're doing that thing over there, homie.
Hey.
Let's go!
I'm feeling like I'm running and I'm feeling like I gotta get away, get away, get away. Better know that I don't and I won't ever stop because you know I gotta win every day, day.
Go!
See, when you wanna pop me, just know that you will never pop me. And I know that I could be a little cocky.
No!
You ain't never gonna stop me. Every time I come in, I gotta set it, then I gotta go and then I gotta get it, then I gotta blow it, then I gotta shut it. Any little thing, every thing that he be doing, because it doesn't matter, because I'm gonna dead it, dead it, then I'm gonna murder everything. And now I move a little file. I know better call a ref and everybody know my style. I know that I'm the best when it comes to doing this. And I be banging on my chest and I'm banging in the east and I'm banging in the west. And I kinda give you more and I will never give you less. You will hear it in the street and you can read it in the press. Do you really wanna know what's next?
Let's go.
See the way we on it and we all up in the race. And you know we gotta go and try to keep up with the pace. And we struggling and hustling and set it and I get it and we always gotta do.
look at me now. Oh, look at me now. Yeah. Fresh to the fuck, man. Fuck these depressors. How y'all doing? I'm the coon chat. I'm a nuisance. I go stupid. I go dumb like the Three Stooges. I don't eat sushi. I'm the shit. No, I'm pollution. No substitution. Got all these sad play air movies in my jacuzzi. Poop reduce it. I never give a fuck about a hater. Got money on my radar. Dressed like a skater. Got a big house. Came with an elevator. You the person ain't eating. I can tell the waiter. Molly said shoot him and I say okay. If you want that boy shoot, then I'm like Ole. I don't care what you say. So don't even speak. Your girlfriend a freak like Cirque du Soleil. That's word to my flag. And my flag red. I'm out of my head. From out of my mind, from the bottom of my climb. You ain't hollering that mind. Nope, not on my time. And I'm not even trying. What's poppin', slime? Nothing five. Nip they trippin', 4-5. I ain't got no time to shuck and jive. These niggas as sweet as pumpkin pie. Throttin' Sprite on a private pipe. Dabbin' tight and got in light. And my pocket's white, and my diamond's white. And my mama's nice, and my dad is gay. You scared, cause I'm too wild. Been here for a while. I was like, for trial. I put it down. I'm so young, money. If you got eyes, look at me now. Look at me now. Look at me now. How? I'm getting paper. Look at me now. Oh, look at me now. Yeah. Yeah. I'm fresher than a moth. Okay. Okay. Is that right? I'm fresher than a moth.
Yeah. Birthday. It's your birthday.
If I die, bury me in St. Louis.
They ask me what I do and who I do it for.
Yeah.
And how I come up with this shit up in the studio.
Yeah.
All I want for my birthday is a big booty house.
No.
All I want for my birthday is a big booty house.
No.
When I die, bury me in St. Louis.
No.
When I die, bury me in St. Louis. All I want for my birthday is a big booty house.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the show. Could you imagine one of the conservative talk show hosts listening to my show and they get to the commercial break? They'd be like, my goodness. Did they just say big booty ho? Come on, Bill O'Reilly. You know you like yourself some big booty hoes. Everybody forgets about his little sexual encounter, right? What do you say? Oh, yeah. You guys remember? He had that lawsuit because he was, like, sexually harassing somebody who worked for him or worked with him or something like that. And it said in the lawsuit that he forgot the term for loofah. So he called it a falafel. He thought it was called a falafel. He's like, and I want to take the falafel and I want to rub it all over you. I love that. Just the thought of Bill O'Reilly. And by the way, the woman who he was talking to, she wasn't even like, she wasn't even digging it. She didn't want to talk to him like that. She didn't view him sexually. And he's like sitting there trying to have phone sex with her. And she's like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I just want to rub. I want to rub the falafel all over you." Oh, Republicans. No, I can't blame just Republicans for that. There's plenty of Democrats, I'm sure, striking out in phone sex as well. All right. Pat Robertson, back to the fun. So, Pat Robertson wanted to lend his thoughts on a particular issue, and he was talking to his younger female co-host. Let's listen in.
Christian girl. Lady.
Absolutely.
All right. Do you see anything in porn that attracts you at all?
No, Pat. These questions that you ask me,
I'm trying to get your attitude.
No, that is not an issue for me. Thank you very much.
Well, it's boring, really.
Well, for some people...
Look, all right, the thing that shocks me, we always thought this was a male thing.
Yeah,
A boy thing, a guy thing.
Yeah.
But now, it looks like 30% of women are involved in pornography.
Yeah.
And there's a, author, kind of a little housewifey type,
yeah.
It doesn't look like some glamour queen or something out of,
But you know what, Pat? This summer, the big book was Fifty Shades of... Was it Fifty Shades of Grey?
That's one I'm getting ready to introduce.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me let you talk. Fifty Shades of Grey.
Yes,
everybody was reading the trilogy.
This woman is kind of like a housewife in some little town in England or wherever it is. Fifty Shades of Grey is the fastest-selling paper book of all time, and the book's erotic content is limited. Some they call it mommy porn. And while most people think of pornography as something men struggle with, a third of the millions of Americans who watch porn are
women.
Yes.
Who thought? I never would have thought.
They're getting addicted to it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Who doesn't love that? It's so cool to watch. What?
People don't like it when I talk about...
It's so awesome to listen to these awkward conservatives give their take on sex, right? I love it. First of all, listen to how he framed the issue. He's like, I thought pornography was only something that boys struggled with. First of all, who's struggling with pornography? What, is there like maybe three or four dudes who think they have a problem with pornography who beat off so much that they can't even like get to work or something? Yeah, maybe there's like three or four dudes in the country, but there's no... Who struggles with... Pornography is the most normal... Excuse me. The most normal thing in the world. And I love his... how surprised he is, too. Like... It turns out, women are actually interested in sex. Well, you don't say, Pat. Turns out they're one of the two genders that exist on this earth. I love how clueless he is. And you know why he's doing that too, right? He's surprised that women are interested in sex because he's probably never met a woman who's interested in him. So he's like, oh... Women actually want sex? Well, they don't want it from me. I just love how he's just such a typical, like, so old, out of touch guy. And you know what? I think it's gotten to the point now where I think I'm just a dick for making fun of him at this point. Because who's taking that seriously? Right? It's like 50 Shades of Grey. It turns out there's a kind of pornographic book that women are reading, and it's really popular. Yeah, Pat. And think about it. It's a book. It's a book. Yes, it does have sexual things in it, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not like you turn to page 27 and all of a sudden you see penetration. It's not like there's videos. It's not a picture book. It's the written word. How sexual can it possibly be? Oh, Pat Robertson is so tremendously awkward, but I love it. I love it. He is America's crazy grandpa at the Thanksgiving dinner table. Do you believe that guy actually ran for president one year? I mean... And I don't think he's changed. I could be wrong because I mean, I'm only 24 years old. I haven't been on the earth 132 years like he has been. But I'm pretty sure he's always been this Looney Tunes. It's just that now that he's getting older and he's got that more old person-sounding voice whenever he says anything, people are like, oh, Grandpa. He's like, oh, Grandpa. There you go, comparing the Democrats to Hitler again, Grandpa. So pleasantly awkward. So now we go from one kooky religious conservative to another one who's probably a little bit more dangerous because he probably has a bigger following, although I don't know how big the following actually is. So let's listen to Glenn Beck's thoughts after the election.
But it's suicide to sit back. And not just for my company or your company, but for the country. We don't have the luxury of time. I've been telling you for a while, and I've told my own staff, if the president wins, I don't know how we survive. I don't know how we survive the regulation that is coming for my industry. I don't know how we're going to survive the pressure and the tactics, because he has more flexibility now, and they remember their enemies. I don't know how we're going to survive, because I won't compromise. I won't make a deal with the devil. I want you to understand this. Inflation is coming. The fiscal cliff is coming. The dollar fell last night on the news. Your taxes are going up. Your health care costs are going up. Your religion is going to come under attack. Gas, coal, and energy is going to become more expensive. Do you remember that list we put out a few months ago of do these things? I will tell you, last week we purchased more farmland as a family. May I recommend, if you have a chance to buy farmland, you buy farmland. If you live in the East, may I recommend, get the hell out of the East. Find a place where you are surrounded by like-minded people. And the best way to find those people is you should probably look at the maps on how counties voted and get away as far as you can from where huge densities of people who are like, I just need FEMA to help me. But get your kids away from the school that is indoctrinating them that socialism is okay. May I highly suggest you get grandfathered in to the Second Amendment today. Oh, and don't forget the ammunition.
Oh, boy. See, it's all fun and games, and it really is, like, just kind of comedic until you get to that end part there, right? It's like, get grandfathered into the Second Amendment, and don't forget the ammunition. And then when people like that guy Jared Loughner, who, by the way, got sentenced today, the one who shot Gabby Giffords in the head, he got sentenced to 7 life terms. But then when a fringe, borderline, crazy political guy like Loughner goes off and shoots a Democratic congressperson, when we go, you know, well, you know, maybe you should tone down the rhetoric a little bit there, going back. He's like, whoa, no, did I do something? I didn't do anything. I didn't pull the trigger. How dare you insinuate I'm responsible for this? First Amendment. Like, no. You don't get it, dude. We're not saying you don't have the right to say whatever the fuck you want to say, right? But we're saying that if you do say these things, a borderline crazy person might actually act on it. Glenn Beck, if you guys don't remember, and you could go back in the archive of my shows there on blogtalkradio.com, and you can see we played the clip at least twice on the show where Glenn Beck actually said, you have to shoot them in the head, referring to liberals. No, this guy's mental. But he has followers. That's the scary part. So, don't forget the ammunition. Get grandfathered into the Second Amendment, because, of course, Barack Obama is going to repeal the Second Amendment because he has the power to repeal parts of the Constitution. No, he doesn't. But they don't need facts. Buy farmland and guns is his advice to people. Really? Buy farmland and... Okay, well... Your religion is going to come under attack. Because, you know, your religion was on the verge of being taken away in the first Barack Obama term. And then, of course, they're coming for your guns. I feel like when I play clips like this, is it even necessary for me to do, like, a big rebuke and a big rebuttal of everything he's saying? Or does simply playing it let everybody know, on both the left wing and the right wing, that this guy's got issues? I mean, you can't possibly believe that. You can't possibly believe that your religion is going to come under attack. 4 years. You know what their only argument was? That they stretched to the most... I mean, this is how much they had to stretch to make a political issue about trying to pretend like Barack Obama attacks religion. First of all, Barack Obama is a Christian, so he is religious. So why would he attack it? Was he going to attack himself? But they go, oh, Barack Obama's attacking your religion because he's making insurance companies cover women for birth control if they want it. Oh, how anti-religious is this guy? Seriously, that's the attack they use to try to pretend like Barack Obama is anti-religious. Obama said I get Bible verses sent to my BlackBerry every morning a couple of years ago. That guy's going to come for your religion? Well, he's got to come for his own religion first because he believes it. He believes it more than I would like him to believe it. I'm an agnostic. I would love it if we had a non-religious president or multiple non-religious members of Congress. And just keep in mind, all the other... See, this is the thing about Glenn Beck, right? He builds it as he talks, right? So he's like, oh, you know, the dollar fell last night, and inflation is coming, and the price of gas is going to go up significantly, and this bad thing is going to happen, and that bad thing is going to happen. And then when he hits his peak, his climax of ridiculous things, and they're going to come for your religion and your guns, right? Just know, bear in mind that it's not like, oh, the first couple things made sense and then he lost it, right? No, every single one of his claims is going to turn out to not come to fruition. I mean, that's always how it is with these right-wingers. They'll assert something as if it's fact. It will turn out it doesn't come out to be true. And then they just keep talking about other things and keep making shit up, and they never acknowledge the fact that they're actually factually wrong on an overwhelming majority of the predictions and the shit they say. Don't forget the ammunition. Oh, man. Oh, what a shame. All right. Well... Let's move forward to more adult issues and leave the crazy people behind now. So in California, they had this prop on the this ballot initiative, I guess you call it, on the ballot over there. It's called Prop 37. And what it is the GMO labeling law. So what does that mean? It means that genetically modified food, by law, the people who make the food would have had to added, you know, just like they have to add all their ingredients on it by law, they would have also had to say genetically modified on it. Now, no hyperbole, no extra nonsense, that's not true, just letting the consumer know this food is genetically modified, right? So it turns out that Prop 37 actually failed, believe it or not. People voted against the idea of knowing what the food is they eat. And, I just wanted to bring it up and touch on it briefly because this is actually an area where even the left is divided, where some people are saying, well, obviously we should know what we're eating, and other people are saying, well, you know, it's a little bit misleading to label it anyway, so they shouldn't have to label it. So let me break down the arguments for you. Canada and the U.S. are the only modern countries that don't label their food if it's genetically modified, or, you know, just let the consumer know on the packaging. There's no long-term peer-reviewed studies showing that genetically modified food is safe, and big agribusiness and chemical companies poured millions of dollars into an ad campaign to defeat the proposition. So $45 million was spent to defeat the proposition, and only $8 million was spent in favor of the proposition. So they did a really great job of muddying the waters and making it out to be about an issue that it's just simply not about, right? You know, they made it seem like, oh, this is going to cost you extra money for when you buy your food. It's going to add costs to the companies, and they're going to pass the consumer on to you. In other words, they actually even went as far to make an argument in one of the ads as if to claim by voting against it, you're voting for it, right? Like, they're saying, oh, we're in favor of labeling the food, and they're not. Well, in reality, it's the opposite, right? But $45 million worth of an ad campaign is going to, you know, probably buy you results. They drastically outspent the other side. And so, like I said, it ended up failing. Now, what's the other side of the debate? What are their points? And I want to be clear here. Just to cite one person who's against it, the science correspondent for Huffington Post, who is like, I don't know exactly what she majored in college, but she's a scientist, right? Biology or whatever she majored in. She knows these issues. And her name's Cara Santamaria. She's actually Bill Maher's ex-girlfriend as well. But she is against the proposition. She doesn't want it to be labeled. And she said, well, it's very misleading and it's kind of like a scare tactic. it makes people think for some reason that the food they're eating is not safe, and there's no reason to think the food they're eating is not safe. And what she cited is that 70% of food or something in that ballpark is genetically modified, and without it, we literally couldn't feed everybody without genetically modified food. That it makes it so that we can, you know, expand the food base by quite a bit and feed more people, right? So where do I stand on it? Well, I personally, if I was in California, I would have voted for it, and I think it's unfortunate that it didn't pass, right? Because, look, John Iadarola from the Young Turks made a great point. He said, listen, if there's cinnamon in my food, the company is mandated by law to tell me on the back that there's cinnamon in the food. Vitamins, vitamin A, vitamin B, you know, how much salt, potassium, et cetera. They have to list all those things and tell you what percentage and how much is a raw number. And, you know, that's part of what the FDA does. And the lawmakers pass this smart laws to tell everybody, look, you have a right to know what's in your food. Well, even if genetically modified food is not bad for you, and I got to be honest, I really don't think there's much evidence to suggest that genetically modified food is bad for you. And if it is true that 70-plus percent of our food is genetically modified, well, you know, there hasn't been a gigantic decrease in life expectancy over the years. And if anything, it's been going in the opposite direction, right, even with the preservatives and the pesticides in the food, et cetera. So, wow, I just lost my train of thought again. Oh, my God, this is the second day in a row this fucking happened. I'm starting to get old to get bad, guys. I'm getting old. I have, like, early onset Alzheimer's or some shit over here. This is not good. But the reason why I would have voted for it is I don't see a tremendous downside to it, right? Well, I mean, what's the worst that happens? A handful of people who, I mean, I would have to imagine it would be a statistically insignificant number of people who decide, I'm not going to eat any genetically modified food, and then they end up just buying not genetically modified food. I don't see a big loss in that. Right? And I mean, I guess that's what what it ultimately comes down to, is that the downsides are non-existent, so why not give the consumer more information and let them make a more informed choice, even if it so happens that it turns out being a so-called scare tactic and turns some people away from eating genetically modified food. So be it. So be it. All right, now let's talk about – I love this guy. So Grover Norquist was on Huffington Post. I don't know if you guys – well, you probably do by now, but Huffington Post for a while now has had their own kind of like – I don't know if you call it TV or just internet TV type thing where, you know, they interview some people and they talk about various political things and the news. And so they had Grover Norquist on and they were interviewing him and – so he was giving his take on the election, and he said, well, yeah, well, Election Day was obviously a win for the GOP. It's like, what? Well, what do you mean? How could you possibly conclude that? And, you know, what was his argument? Well, he said, the GOP, we still have control of the House. And that's important, and that shows that the American people are still in line with the GOP philosophy. Well, I mean, if he really believes that, and he thinks that makes sense, I guess, cool, that's fine. But if he thinks that's going to convince other people, that's sad, because it's certainly not. So here are the facts. The GOP had 242 seats in the House before the election. After the election, that dropped to 233. The Republicans also lost 2 Senate seats. So although they still have control of the House, which, again, is true, they lost seats in the House. And also one of the main reasons they were still able to maintain control of the House is that the redistricting favored Republicans this last time around when they redistricted, right? And that's not always the case, but it just so happened that this time it did. So they also had the Tea Party members, the really far right-wingers, the people who actually represented the type of ideology that somebody like Grover Norquist would be more in line with, Alan West, Todd Akin, Richard Murdoch, Joe Walsh, all gone. Dunzo, see you later, don't come back, not interested. Right? And then who do we elect? Well, like we talked about yesterday, we elected Alan Grayson. We elected Elizabeth Warren. I mean, those are real left-wingers. Those are actual progressive lions. So in reality, obviously Barack Obama beating Mitt Romney by a handy margin. So in reality, it turns out, Grover Norquist is exactly wrong. No surprise, he's been wrong a billion times in the past. But, I mean, this really does speak to a bigger problem that's been going on in the GOP. It's just a complete wholesale denial of reality, and they assert it as confident can be, and expect other people to believe it when they spew their nonsense. But now, I do want to switch gears for a sec and talk about this, which I think is a, you know, I briefly touched on it the past couple of days, but I want to dive in a little deeper to this. I think there's going to be sometime in the near future. I don't know how soon it's going to be, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years. I don't know how soon it's going to be, but I do think at some point in the future, we're going to have another big economic disaster, very similar to what happened in 2008, right? And I also think it'll be worse than what happened in 2008 because we kind of are already stretched out as far as we could possibly stretch out in the sense that, you know, when we went ahead and we took the emergency measures to stop the recession, I mean, one of the measures I completely disagree with, which was the bailouts of the big banks, right? And then some other ones I did agree with, like the bailout of GM, I think there was a much better argument for that. Although I might have done it slightly differently, but again, there was a much better argument for that, and I understand why they did it. And the stimulus package, $787 billion stimulus package. Again, it wasn't perfect, the stimulus package, but it certainly was defensible that they did it, and I just wouldn't have done the Republican aspect of it. If you guys remember, the Republicans got a third of what they wanted in the bill. It was a third tax cuts. I would have done actual direct stimulus spending, more infrastructure spending. But I think this time around it's going to be worse because, I mean, we're literally running out of money. Where are we going to get the money from, right? And why do I think it's going to happen this time around? Well, this time around I think we're going to have a recession, not because of Barack Obama, right? He is less at fault. If anything, he would be at fault by omission more than by commission. By commission, the people who are guilty are the Republicans who passed laws under Ronald Reagan, passed laws under H.W. Bush, passed laws under George W. Bush, and Clinton to a certain extent because Glass-Steagall was repealed under Clinton, which was a disaster, right? But the reason why we're going to have another economic disaster is going to be because of it could be one of a couple things. Number one, derivatives. I don't know how familiar you guys are with derivatives, but we covered on the show a couple months ago how it's just an astronomical number that it makes up the derivative market. There's more money in the derivative market than money that actually exists. Go figure, right? So, and that's completely unregulated, and nobody knows how to regulate them. I mean, it's just flat-out casino capitalism. It's wanton betting, honestly, exactly like you're in a casino. I'm trying to figure out a better way to explain it. But I mean, if you're betting with more money than actually exists, and you're placing bets on bets on bets, which is partly what the derivatives market is, that's going to come to fruition. You can't have unregulated capitalism and hope it's going to work out, because what people do is they make decisions that benefit them in the short run, but in the long run could crash the fucking economy. We learned this very well in 2008. So we're going to have a problem either with derivatives or, again, with bank leverage. Now, we passed Dodd-Frank, which was okay, but it didn't go nearly far enough in terms of instituting proper regulation on the big banks and financial institutions. Now, they can still leverage egregious amounts of money and essentially build a house of cards and collapse the economy again, right? And why is it that we didn't institute proper regulations after we had this crash? Well, keep it real, because of the influence of money on politics. When all the people who run the big banks and the big financial institutions fund the campaigns of the Democrats and the Republicans, and a disaster happens, and those same people say, look, we gave you a shitload of money. You can't just let us go bankrupt. You either got to give us a bailout, and we'll take it from here. And by the way, when you give us that bailout, don't expect to put any rules attached to it, like limiting compensation and us buying private jets and bonuses, et cetera, because we're still going to do whatever the fuck we want. The American taxpayer is going to subsidize our fuck-ups because we said so and because we're your corporate overlords, right? Now, if that sounds a little too conspiratorial, I just want everybody to understand. It's not like there's a formal conspiracy and they all think, you know, we're going to be evil and screw the American people over. It's that this is just the status quo. This is how it works. It's par for the course in Washington for these big business interests to be very close with the politicians and to give them, quote, advice, right? When in reality, it's not really advice. It's let me tell you how we can get away unscathed and take all the money, and everybody else gets hosed in the process. So it's either going to be because of bank leverage or because of derivatives that we're going to have another economic downturn. And there might even be, I'll give a third option here, this one I think is a little bit less likely, although it still might happen, the student loan crisis. It's very similar in the way it functions. I was reading articles the past month or so. It's very similar in the way it functions to the subprime mortgage crisis, which we had in 2008. And the American people are all maxed out in terms of credit, man. We're a consumer culture. We don't produce nearly as much as we used to, right? Wages for the middle class have been completely stagnant since 1980 and onward. So while the richest people in the country are getting richer, and you're working your ass off, your wages are stagnant, barely keeping up with inflation. So this is going to come to fruition at some point or another. And my fear is that if it happens under Barack Obama's administration, we know what the right wing is going to do. They're going to blame him, obviously. Because why is everybody? He's been in office for 7 years, and yeah, it's obviously his fault. Well, no, it's not directly his fault because he's not the one who instituted the policies of deregulation. But he certainly wasn't as strong in attempting to regulate them as he should be, which is why you always hear me talk on the show about how Barack Obama is a centrist corporatist. He's cut from the same cloth as Bill Clinton was. They are pro-establishment Democrats. Now, if you actually wanted to set up a government that would have been responsive to the American people and responsible, we would have had to have somebody along the lines of a second FDR who came in there and said, I welcome their hate, talking about the CEOs and the CFOs and the owners of the country and the segments of society that represent a tremendously wealthy small group of concentrated owners, right? We would have had to have a president who said that and who also instituted very stringent regulations and, you know, didn't cave on the Bush tax cuts, keeping the Bush tax cuts for the rich the first time around. That would have been pretty important. And by the way, we're only having a discussion of bringing back the Bush tax cuts, rolling it back to 39% or 40%. It's 36% right now. They want to raise the marginal income tax rate to 39% or to 40%. What we would really need to do? Come on, dog. I mean, you have to be looking at on paper, a tax rate of like 60% or 70%. And then the effective rate would be more like, after all the deductions and the nonsense, would be more like 43% or 44%, which is what it was, you know, during the golden age of economic expansion in the U.S. We have to go back to that. So it's going to be a very interesting thing to follow what happens in the next couple of years in the Obama administration and to listen how everybody spins it one way or another after we have what is an inevitable another recession coming. All right, so let me take another quick break here, and then when we come back, we still got much more to discuss, so stick around.
Hold his tank. Extend no clip. Extend no roll. Where your girl leave me, she need a half a
inside the jurist though. When I got bury me inside the truest though. True to my religion, to everything I'm too different. So when I die, bury me, nigga, too busy. They ask me what I do and who I do it for. And how I come up with this shit up in the studio. All I want for my birthday is a big booty house. All I want for my birthday is a big booty house. When I die, bury me inside the Gucci style. When I die, bury me inside the Louis style. All I want for my birthday is a big booty house. All I want for my birthday is a big booty house.
Yeezy, how you doing, huh? It's my birthday, I deserve to be greedy, huh? She holding out, she ain't giving to the needy, huh? You go downstairs and fall asleep with the TV on. Y'all been together 10 years, you deserve a menage. Especially if you put that BMW in her garage. Especially if you paid a couple payments on her mama crib. Went to her niece's graduation, man, I hate those kids. Last birthday, she got you a new sweater. Put it on, give her a kiss and tell her do better. She said, how about I get you jewelry from the West End? How about she hit the West End and get a best friend? I'm joking, I'm just serious. I asked her, don't be acting like no actress. If we preach it, then we practice. Don't be reaching, don't be touching shit. Me and Kanye West Benz, cause I will turn you back to a pedestrian.
They ask me what I do and who I do it wow. And how I come up with this shit up in the studio.
Wow.
All I want for my birthday is a big booty house. All I want for my birthday is a big booty house. When I die, bury me inside the Gucci style. When I die, bury me inside the Louis style. All I want for my birthday is a big booty house. All I want for my birthday is a big booty house.
It's your birthday.
Yeah.
It's your birthday. Bad bitch contest. You in first place.
Bye.
You in first place.
Bye.
As long as you love me, I'll be your platinum, I'll be your silver.
back. Sorry to take you guys away from Justin Bieber. Apologize for that. Whoops! Romney's transition website was spotted by a blogger. So before the election, Mitt Romney's staff prepared a transition website in case the former Republican nominee was elected president of the United States. And even though Romney didn't win the election, the site saw the light of day for a few moments. Tegan Goddard, author and former policy advisor, caught the slip-up and captured screenshots of the new removed pages, and then he posted them on his blog, Political Wire. Quote, "I'm excited about our prospects as a nation," unquote. A quote attributed to Romney, declared on the site's main page, "My priority is putting people back to work in America." There were details for prospective applicants who wanted a position with the administration, as well as a rundown of the inaugural process. Some are jumping to make jokes about the fact that Romney's staff had this transition website ready, but let's be realistic, this kind of preparation is far from unusual. Accidentally making the site line even for a few minutes, though, I'm sorry, accidentally making the site live for even a few minutes, though, that's the mistake. So this is a story from Mother Jones. I'm actually, as we speak, I'm looking at the transition website, which was showing for a second. And, oh, it's an epic disaster for Mitt Romney. It says president-elect in the top corner, and he's standing with his chin up with the American flag behind him. And it says in quotes, quote, "I'm excited about our prospects as a nation. My priority is putting people back to work." Oh, my God, man. Do you guys have any idea how badly Mitt Romney wanted to win the presidency? I mean, he had such a hard-on for being the president. And another article from Mother Jones here, Romney advisor, not a single person on the campaign thought he would lose. Romney advisors are telling CBS News that there wasn't one person on the Romney campaign who saw the loss coming, and the GOP presidential candidate was shell-shocked by the results. Here's what they have to say. Quote, "We went into the evening confident we had a good path to victory. I don't think there was one person who saw this coming. There's nothing worse than when you think you're going to win and you don't. It was like a sucker punch. Romney was shell-shocked." The CBS story indicates that the Romney team even bought into the unskewed polls theory. Remember, we talked about that yesterday. One of the guys with the most disastrous predictions was the owner and person who runs the site unskewedpolls.com, which supposedly took the liberal bias out of the polls and showed you what the actual chances were of Mitt Romney getting elected. And they were disastrously wrong. Their first prediction was Romney with 345 electoral votes. And then they revised it to Romney with like 283 or something like that. This report comes after other indications that Romney campaign was disregarding polling data. On election night, the Romney campaign told the press it didn't have a concession speech prepared. Karl Rove went against Fox News and questioned whether Ohio was going to Obama, contradicting overwhelming electoral analysis. And Wednesday, Romney's website briefly displayed a page indicating he had won the presidency before it was taken down. Okay, that's what we just talked about. This is like, I mean, it really is kind of fascinating to me, though, right? Like, I'm actually shocked to read that they really thought this was, like, out of the blue. Like, they couldn't believe they lost. It's hard to believe that because, again, I mean, these are people who are the head of the at the head of the Republican Party. You know, no matter how I feel about them personally or about their ideology personally, these are people who are functioning members of society, right? Like they are surrounded by politics 24/7, and they really thought that that one fringe right wing website, unskewedpolls.com, had this election nailed. They really thought Dick Morris had this projection nailed. I love, and their argument was so childish. All Dick Morris's argument was, and all that website, unskewedpolls.com, their argument was, well, we think that all of the polls are oversampling Democrats and undersampling Republicans. And what was their evidence for that? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They said, oh, well, here's what we think. We think that turnout in 2008 was super high, and it's not going to be that high this time around. So instead of using 2008 models to, do our polls, we're using 2004 models to use our poll. Guys, 2004 was 8 years ago. More people have come to the country since 2004, and certainly more people have gotten to an age where they can vote, and they are politically active, and they will vote. How can you possibly say we're going to use 2004 models and have everybody in the room agree, like, that's a good idea, and that's going to give you an accurate prediction as to how the election's going to go? I mean, that doesn't make any goddamn sense. But, I mean, that's what it really comes down to, is that these Republicans... You know how oftentimes we've had the discussion on the show, like, are they purposely misleading you, or are they actually Looney Tunes and just not that bright, and certainly aren't good at letting contradictory evidence to their worldview into the picture, right? Well, it turns out, at least with this story in particular, hearing that Romney was genuinely, like, amazed that he lost, and his whole campaign was like, oh my God, I can't believe we lost, it makes you think that the latter is true, that they really are, like, just, he's just not that bright. I mean, you had every single poll except Gallup poll, which was an outlier, Rasmussen, which is admittedly conservative, and unskewedpolls.com, which, again, is really conservative because they say, oh, we're going to weed out the liberal bias of math, right? All the other polls said Obama's going to win, right? Not only just popular vote, but comfortably with electoral votes. And Nate Silver, the guy who was dead right in 2008, was saying Obama was definitely going to get reelected with 332 electoral votes. And Romney and his people, oh, dismiss it, it doesn't mean anything, la, 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 they cover their ears, la, it doesn't fit with my worldview, so I don't care. Well, then you're a child, man, if you're not willing to let that stuff into the picture. But how many times have I said this? I'm a broken record. All right. Let's move forward. I got a couple more things I want to get through here. Before we wrap up the show, got about, 7 minutes left or so? So this is just a quick little interesting thing I wanted to share with you guys. Throughout human history, 107.7 billion people have lived, and today it's 7 billion people, or 6.5% still living. Let me read that one more time. Throughout human history, 107.7 billion people have lived. Today, it's 7 billion people living, and that's about 6.5% of the people who have lived. Now, I thought that was fascinating. Why? Because to put a numerical value on something that, I mean, you never really think about that, right? Like, I wonder how many people have ever lived. In fact, you probably think, like, that's just incalculable. Like, how do we measure that? I have no idea. Well, apparently some really smart scientists got in a room and they figured out how to do it. And I think that number is incredibly small. Don't you? Only 107.7 billion people have ever lived. I mean, that means that the stimulus package was more as a dollar amount than people that have ever lived. By six times, right? The stimulus package was $787 billion. And that means, like, the Iraq War and Afghanistan War, when all said and done, $4 trillion spent on them. Well, I mean, 107.7 billion is nothing compared to that. I thought that was just fascinating. It shows you that still 7 billion people living today, that's 6.5% of people, right? It shows you that we're so early in this human experiment that's going on, right? Like, we're just such... It's been just a little snippet of how long the universe has existed, and even our world has existed, that, you know, we've existed, that human beings have existed. It's really staggering to think about, and it really puts in perspective our lives in the sense that, you know what, I'm going to live 80 years maybe, like, that's just a blink of an eye in the grand scheme of things. It's so tremendously tiny. I tweeted out something the other day about how about 5 billion years from now, our sun is going to turn into what they call a red giant, which is, you know, a star after it's already existed for an extended period of time, it dies out, right? Because the sun is basically a big nuclear reactor. So it dies out, eventually becomes a red giant. So what's going to happen when it becomes a red giant? Well, it's going to expand so much that it's going to engulf the Earth. It's going to scorch our entire planet and make it completely uninhabitable. Everybody's going to die in 5 billion years. And then all of a sudden, all this big human experiment that we have going on, boom, we're done. That's it. Hello, goodbye, see you later. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. No more. Nobody exists anymore. That's such a crazy thing to think about. Which leads me to my last story, and I'll leave you guys with this. This is some food for thought. It's very interesting. HD40307G is an alien super Earth planet that they say is just a stone's throw away from Earth, and it may be habitable, astronomers say. So it's located in what they call the Goldilocks zone, which makes it habitable, which is where we are, right, in our solar system. And in relation to its star, it's not too hot, it's not too cold, it's just perfect to have liquid water. Liquid water means you're able to actually sustain life. And it is 42 light years away. And just to show you how close that is, our galaxy is 100,000 light years wide. And that's just our galaxy. And our galaxy is one of many within the universe. So, I mean, it's mind-boggling how close that is. Although, obviously, from a raw numbers perspective, that obviously is still far. It takes light 42 years to get from there to here and from here to there. I mean, that's super far away, but in terms of the grand scheme of things, it's pretty close. So future telescopes might actually be able to look directly at this planet, which is like an awesome thing to think about. And again, this makes me think that if there's the possibility of life existing so close to Earth, then statistically speaking, the probability of some form of life, whether it's like, you know, little amoebas or whatever they're called, proteins or whatever, right? Whatever, little forms of bacterial life, if you will. The possibility of that existing somewhere in the universe, it has to be incredibly high. And, I mean, look, maybe I'm the loser, maybe I'm the nerd, maybe I'm the geek, maybe I'm the dork who, like, is really interested in stuff like this. But I just find that super, super interesting, man. And it really gives you, perspective as to what we are in the grand scheme of things. All right, so that is all the time I have for you guys today. Thank you, as always, for listening. Just to give you guys some updates, I know I've been talking about this the past couple of days and actually probably the past couple of weeks. But we do have the website in the making where you can become a member. There's all types of perks. I'll let you know when that website is up. Follow me on Twitter, at Kyle Kalinske. Email is kylekalinske@hotmail.com. And YouTube channel is Secular Talk. And that also we're in the works of upgrading that and making it so that you actually see the live show. You can see clips of the live show every day in HD on YouTube. And so we'll be expanding through there as well. And have a happy Thursday, go out, get drunk, get laid, or at least try to do one of those things. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.